Hi, my name is Harry Etier, and you're listening to The Harry Minute. Follow us wherever you stream your podcast, and be sure to check me out on social media at Harry Etier. That is HARRYITIE. Hello and welcome to the Harry Minute. My name is Harry Etier. I'm super excited for this episode because today we're looking at what it means to be Nigerian, to be American, and to be gay. I'll be speaking with Obinna Igwe, a first generation Nigerian American who understands what it means to live in these intersections. Hi Obinna, how's it going?
I'm good, Harry. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you very much for agreeing to have this conversation with me. What we're trying to do is to just look at how our different identities and experiences intersect and how it makes us who we are, how it forms our belief systems, you know, and yeah, just have a great conversation.
Yeah, I'm down. Let's go.
Okay. So you are a Nigerian American who is living in America, who is also gay. Just how has that experience been like for you so far?
I mean, it's been, you know, journey of ups and downs, but I wouldn't have it any other way because I don't know who else I would be. You know, I feel like I remember there's a conversation I had with one of my friends. He's Haitian. We haven't talked in a while, but he's Haitian American. He was saying, like, if it wasn't being gay, it'd be something else. And, you know, it's not like straight people or people of other identities don't have their own, you know, quote unquote, battles to fight, you know. So, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way, you know? So, I mean, it's been good, especially the later years, you know, like just being able to accept myself wholeheartedly and just like looking at where I am now versus like where I was, because I'm 31 now. So like looking at where I was when I was 21, you know, just to give a little bit of, you know, backstory, you know, both of my parents are from Nigeria, of course, and I was born in America, been back to Nigeria 4 times. And, you know, of course, it's like a little bit of the, you know, I kind of felt like I was hiding, you know, growing up and everything. And, you know, I was always a little bit different from everybody. You know, I grew up in Houston, Southwest Side, where, more of the guys were more into, like, I guess they were just like a little bit more, you know, hood, for lack of better words. But me, I mean, I have my hood side, but I'm definitely more like, I guess, you know, prim and proper, as some people may say it. But, you know, I grew up in that, and I had my friend groups and everything like that. And, you know, it was like, I just could never share that side of myself. But the older I got, probably, yeah, definitely, like after I came to Atlanta the first time in 2011, I met a guy that was, I mean, he's a straight man, but he became like a life mentor for me at the time. And, you know, he knew about me and everything. And then, of course, my twin brother knows about me. And we were able to, you know, just have that support within each other, you know. So, I mean, it makes it easier to have like a sibling or someone that is very close to me that I know has my back going through the same thing. So, you know, it's been unique, but I mean, I, you know, like I said, I wouldn't have it any other way to kind of answer your question because it's kind of broad and I kind of went everywhere with it, but you know, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of, you know, I wanted to go from a much more broad space before I started, you know, like honing in on some of like your particular experiences. So let us start from the very beginning. Growing up in a Nigerian household, I'm guessing you're a first generation Nigerian,
born in America.
Growing up in a Nigerian household, and realizing that, you know, you're kind of different, you know. How was growing up like, and, you know, figuring out that, okay, I am not the exact archetype of what my family would want me to be. How was that?
Yeah. For you? I mean, I just remember, like, the earliest memory I have is being 4 years old. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm Obina and whatever. I live in Houston. And, you know, here I am. And then I just started to realize, like, I'm really different because, like, I could tell, like, I think anybody, man, woman, straight or gay, can tell when somebody of the same or opposite gender is attractive. But I remember being a kid and being like, why am I looking at this boy's lips? Or why am I thinking this guy is cute? Or why do I kind of have these sort of feelings that, like, you know, guys you typically would have for girls, you know? And, you know, being in a Nigerian household, I remember just, like, you know, very, very early on, you know, parents are putting it into Nigerian child's head, like, you know, you're gonna do this, you're gonna be that, don't do this, don't do that. You know, like, I remember even a memory, like, when I was a child, like, just walking. And I would say that I'm not hyper masculine, but I'm not hyper feminine either, but definitely more masculine leaning. But, like, I remember having different moments, like, where I would just have, like, certain mannerisms. And my parents would be like, oh, but no, don't do that. You know, whatever. Like, they would just snap on me, like, act like this, do this, whatever. I mean, I would say I was definitely typically into boy things, quote unquote boy things. Like, I mean, I played the video games. I played outside. You know, I could get, you know, down and dirty with all the boys in the playground and all that stuff. You know, so I mean, there was that, you know, as a child, and I had my friend group and all that. And I had, like, my aunts and my uncles that would always come around, and I started to really realize, like, more about, like, what they value. And I remember, like, growing up, I would say things to my parents, like, oh, I'm gonna get married to another Nigerian woman and have, like, 10 children. They'd be like, hey, praise the Lord, hey, like, they would just be so, you know, happy, because both of my parents come from very large families. I mean, my dad is one of seven, my mom is one of eight. And in my head, I'm thinking, like, oh, I would like to have a family just like they did, like how they came from and how the family is so big and everybody would come together. Like, I was always the one when I was a child who always wanted to bring everybody together. And that definitely played a role in, like, I guess how I was in the family. Like, everything was always about family, family, family. And, like, I started to see how much I sought their approval and how much I wanted to please them and do things to make them happy. And if they were happy, then I would be happy, you know, so far as long as I was putting them before myself. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, then I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Everything is in the interest of the family. And I know, you know, Harry, like, in our culture, it's very much about collectivism versus individualism.
Yes, you know, true.
So it's always about, like, everything is in the best interest of, like, the parents and how everything else looks to everybody on the outside, you know. So it was definitely a lot of that, you know, growing up. And it started to really affect me the older I got. I'd be like, I want to do this, and they'd be like, no, like, it could be something as little as, Dad, I want to grow an afro. He's like, Obina, you continue to get bald fade. I don't care. I don't want you to have any hair. You know, all that, whatever. You know, just like anything that was outside of the vision that they had for me. Because, you know, as we get older, we start to have, like, our own individual mindset and interests and, you know, I guess maybe even values or morals. You know, we still embody a lot of the things that our parents teach us, which I think I still do very much to this day. But, you know, if I wanted to venture outside of, you know, what they had for me, it was just a problem. And that started to affect, you know, things later on in my life, which I'm sure we'll get into.
thank you again for, you know, going deep and, you know, explaining a lot more. But I feel like for a lot of people who live on the continent or who are Nigerians, right? And live in Nigeria, there's this idea that if you're going to be in America, for example, you have the ability to be able to live your life. You know, you're like, if say you're gay or you're trans or you're whatever, you can you can express yourself and live that life without the without worrying about what anybody would think. But I'm guessing that's not really the case.
It's only the case when you are separate from your family, whether you live in the same city or you move out of where you grew up, that you really have more of that ability to explore. But it can still be, you know, like a negative experience depending on how, you know, choices people make or whatever. But I would say, like, you definitely have the opportunity to like live your life and have that greater degree of freedom and being able to explore yourself, whether it's sexually or emotionally or, you know, just having different experiences. It's definitely a lot easier, like, you know, when you're more independent in America, I'll say that. Not so much when you're living with your family. So yeah, definitely like when you're on your own, you know.
Okay. I think that's very similar. So I'm guessing that's like a universal experience for everybody, whether you're here or you're elsewhere. But I guess that it's just this idea of living free here. But when you have your family here, you know, I'm guessing it's a different dynamic for you as a person. So, which leads me to my next question is, how did you have the conversation with your folks? Because you had mentioned that, you know, your folks kind of know. I don't know whether you said this on this conversation or when we had like a conversation prior to now. But I know you had mentioned that all your folks know about your sexuality. So I'm just very curious to just know how that went for you.
Yeah. I would say when I was in high school that they kind of had like some suspicion, if you will, because I mean, I wasn't really bringing anybody around, but then I felt like maybe they had a suspicion, but I don't know if they knew that early. But I always feel like parents always know, even, but they will continue to deny it within themselves until it comes up and it's like a don't ask, don't tell. That's how it goes. Like, it's a saying that they say in the military in the US, but I feel like the same thing goes in Nigerian household. Like, you know, if it's not spoken of or asked about, then I just don't even want to believe that it could really be a possibility, you know? I mean, I dated, you know, a couple of girls in high school. I had prospects in college, but I never really entertained anybody like very, very seriously. My parents were very happy. Like, I remember when I was, you know, in the U.S., I don't know how it is like in secondary school in Nigeria, but in the U.S. in high school, there's a big deal around like senior prom, which is like the event where, you know, whether you're a senior or you're even younger in high school between 9th and 12th grade, that you go to prom and you go to like the, it's like a big school dance. Everybody dresses fancy. People may come in limousine or fancy car, whatever, their tuxes and their dresses and all those things like that. And I remember I went with one girl, like very beautiful girl. She's married now to a man and everything. And I remember how happy my parents were when I, you know, went to prom with her. Her parents were very happy, you know, oh, you're married to a good family, da da da. Like, they were just so happy. But then, you know, I continued to go through college. My parents were just like, ah, all these pretty girls, and they're so fine. You are very handsome. You know, I like that you are very focused and all those things. But, you know, it got to a point where it was just like, Obina, like, who are you talking to? You are around all these fine girls, you know, in school. I know that you are very focused. You want to be a, you know, studious person, all this, whatever, whatever. but you need to find somebody, you know. And then I would say probably around the time that I was like mid-20s, that I was living in Florida at the time. And I would say at the time I was kind of like finding myself. My twin brother was already living in Atlanta. I was living in Florida. And I remember my dad asking me, so how it went was, my twin brother had somebody that he was in a serious relationship with. My parents wanted to visit him in Atlanta at the time. And my brother told them, oh, just so y'all know, I have somebody living with me and we're in a serious relationship. By this time, they already know about my brother, but they didn't know about me. They tried to get me to convert him, quote unquote, and you need to be telling your brother to read his Bible and this and that or whatever. Know that, you know, a man that findeth a wife findeth a good thing, whatever, like anything they could come up with from the Bible. And, you know, they didn't want to visit my brother anymore after he told him that he was in a relationship with a guy living in his house. And then for a while, they didn't talk to me or my twin for like a week or two. And I'm like, why are they not talking to me if they're just hearing that news from him? So then my dad called me while I was in Florida. He's like, oh, you're meeting people out there. Like, how is it? And I'm like, oh, you know, I've met some people, whatever, whatever. And then my dad just straight up asked me, like, you know, I want you to be honest with me. Like, are you like your brother? Because he told us that he has someone that is living with him and that are in a serious relationship for several months. And I was like, you know, I just support my brother. Like, does that mean I have to be like him? And then he just was like asking me again. And there was this long pause and I told him yes. And he was like, how long has this happened? When did you catch it? Like, it's something to catch. When did something happen to you when you were a child? I'm like, no, I was never molested. I was never abused. Nothing like that. This is just what it is. And we talked for some minutes and then it was just like, okay, bye, bye. I called my mom after I spoke to him. But right before I called my mom, I spoke to some friends. We had like a group chat. And all these friends of mine, they've already been out. Their parents know. A lot of them were Black American. So not to say that it can be easier for them because they subscribe to religion a lot. But I would say that it's definitely easier for Black Americans than it is for people that are Afro-Latin, African, or Caribbean, you know? So speaking to these friends that were like, oh, you know, we got you, like, what do you need, da 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 da. And then I called my mom. My mom was happy, so I was like, oh, okay, my dad hasn't even told her yet. I was like, oh, mom, where are you? She said she was so happy. She was like, I'm shopping, da 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 da. I was like, oh, mom, okay, I'll call you later, just call me when you get home. She calls me when she gets home. She's still happy. I'm like, oh, okay, so my dad hasn't told her. I wanted to tell her before she heard it from somebody else. And I told her that I came out to my dad. And she went off on me, like, Bible verses, this, that, and the third. Like, hey, how can you be saying this thing? Oh, hey! Like, she just went off, like, think of, like, any Nollywood, Gollywood film. And how the women behave, like it was all that, you know? And, you know, we went back and forth for a little bit. And then, you know, I told her bye and I love you. Then she just said bye, hung up the phone, you know? And then time went by and I spoke with one of my friends in that group chat I was just telling you about. We spoke for quite some time. And then I got a call from my dad's phone and it ended up being the both of them on the phone. And my dad was just talking about how much, like, after I came out to him that he couldn't even concentrate. So he just left work. And they were both coming at me, Bible scriptures, this, that, and the third. What will our friends think? Ha! You know, you're 25. You're very handsome. Are you not? How can you not like the touch of a woman? Just at least try it. Try to have sex with him. Have you ever had sex with, I mean, They were asking all these very personal questions about, have I had sex with a woman and this, that, and the third. And he's just, I should just touch a breast or touch vagina. I mean, they were really going in, like, just, they really tried. And I was just like, you know, mom, dad, this is what it is. And the crazy part about all that, after that, you know, long story, is that I had tickets to see them for Thanksgiving and Christmas. After those conversations, I canceled both those tickets. People that I knew that were going out of town while I was living in Florida at the time were like, oh, what are you about to do for like the holidays? I was like, oh, my parents are going. I just lied to them. I was like, oh, my parents are going to Nigeria, so I'll just be here. They're like, oh, man, that sucks. Like, and other people were going home to see their families and all that. And like, I just had to be in Florida just by myself. But I was grateful at the time for people that I did know out there that I met through a Pride Center out there. And they were like, oh, you're by yourself. No, don't be by yourself. They were much older than me. And they've been together for like, at that time, maybe 20 years. And they got married in 2014 once, you know, gay marriage became legal in the US. And they invited me over. They just didn't want me to be alone. They fed me. They had all their other friends over. And they were just like, I remember how it used to be when I was afraid to come out. But like, their parents accepted them. And they're two Black American men. But one of them has roots in the Caribbean, but he's kind of far removed from it. But, you know, everybody was just like very affirming to me at that time. So I was grateful for it. But still, it was, I had my challenges, you know, like, this is the first time, like I told you earlier, like, I'm the one who's all about bringing family together. And I had cousins like, are you not coming back home for the holiday? What's going on? They didn't know what was going on, you know? And yeah, my parents and I, we didn't talk for almost 1 year. If we spoke during that year, the exchange was literally maybe like one or two text messages back and forth, because something that was from me got mailed to them and they asked me about it or something like that. But we just never really spoke. Like, one time my dad got a bill from a dermatologist that I went to go see, and he was like, what is this? I said, oh, I had a breakout of something. And he was like, oh, okay, I'll pay the bill. I said, thank you. And he said, okay, and he hung up the phone. The other time when my mom called me, I was in Florida, she called me. I don't know if you ever heard about, it was back in 2016, the Pulse massacre that happened in Orlando, Florida. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I remember.
Yeah. So I was living in Fort Lauderdale, and that in Orlando are 3 hours apart, but my mom called me. I was like, oh, my mom is calling me. I don't even know why. And I picked up the phone. She just was like literally sounding like she was so tired. She said, are you okay? I heard about the thing where the man came to the club and started shooting. I said, mom, like, that's 3 hours away from me, you know, but I appreciate you checking in. And then I heard my dad in the background saying, yeah, that was 3 hours away. And then she said, okay, all right. And then that was it. She just hung up the phone. So yeah. And then we started to speak again when they had their wedding, like a wedding anniversary celebration. And by that time I was leaving Florida and I was deciding whether or not I was going to live in Houston or Atlanta. And yeah. So I know that's a lot, but you know, that's how it went, you know.
I think I really appreciate how deep you went, how explanatory, and there's just so many things to unpack and expand on. Especially mm-hmm. when you talked about how, even if you see like African Americans, for example, are religious like us, the experience mm-hmm. is still very different as regards expressing your sexuality. Mm-hmm. But I want to ask, can you just talk briefly about how you and your parents were able to repair your relationship?
I mean, they really wanted us to come through for their wedding anniversary celebration. And that was when they started to like text a little bit. And like, in my head, I'm kind of thinking like, oh, they really just want things to maybe look a certain way. Like, how will it look if we're having a wedding anniversary and our children aren't there? So part of it is like, okay, are they trying to save face or do they want to repair the relationship? Like, what is it? You know, because I would say that my parents are pretty like well known in the Igbo community back in Houston where we grew up. You know, like always, like growing up, it was always every weekend my parents were out, be coming home late, like, this one is having baby shower, this one is getting married, this one is having business event, this one is doing bazaar, this one is doing this one, that one, like always something. They were always out. And people were supporting their businesses and all that. And, you know, so I felt like the wedding anniversary was like, I would say the incarnation of us working to at least speak again. And we were just trying to like make sure everything was together and all that. And I'm like, okay, I need to think of a speech that I would say at the wedding. And they're talking about the flow of how things would go during the, you know, the Jubilee for their wedding anniversary. Because at that point, they would be married for 25 years. And, you know, it's just like little by little, that was the start. And then just over the years, it was just like at least trying to call and check in. And of course, me having that thing inside where I'm like family. I wanted to be able to reach out to them and be like, how are y'all doing? Do this, do that. Anything that they wanted, I almost would like drop everything and do what they needed. And, you know, just to be able to like have them in my life.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you. Sorry. But you said something about having to want to do everything they require of you. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it comes from a space of, because you feel like you have, and I might be wrong, but there's this feeling sometimes, I failed you in this regard, or I can't, you know, you had a dream or an imagination of who I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I can't live up to that right now. So I'm going to be available in every other way and try and mm-hmm. compensate for not being that you want me to be. I don't know if is that something that...
Yeah, absolutely. It's rooted in abandonment issues. I feel like a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus community can relate to that. It's like working to earn their love. Like, what can I do? You know, I'm giving so much of myself that I'm forgetting about myself. So yeah, you're absolutely right in that regard. And so it was like, you know, doing anything. Like I could be in Atlanta or anywhere else. Oh, I have this thing, please, Biko, I need da 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 da. I mean, I'm just like, oh, let me leave my friends or leave this work thing or school thing. Oh, and try to get it together for them, and they can be all the way in Houston and I'm somewhere else. And, you know, yeah, that's like, you know, how that went or whatever. And I think the question that you initially asked was about like repairing the relationship and all that, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. So like, you know, just little by little, you know, I was like I said, I was making myself very much available to them. And then for a while, I was living back in Houston and I was working with my parents and their businesses. And like, when I tell you, like, that was my life, you know. And whenever I had like little moments to like break away and link with other gay like Africans that I met like in Atlanta that may just happen to be visiting Houston, then I would do that and we would go out and do stuff. And my parents, they would never ask no questions. If I had dates or whatever, they don't want to even know, because it's like, you know, they know like what's up. Like they know that it's probably some gay person that he's going to be out with late at night, if we're hitting the club, if we're eating out, if we're just whatever, hitting the streets, you know. I would say like my twin brother and I, we started to really just like say or introduce certain aspects of our lives to them, like, oh, how are you all doing? Oh, we're fine. You know, how is Atlanta? And I'm like, oh, okay, everything is okay. Like, we just got through hanging out with some friends, and like, oh, friend, you know, and they just will listen. And I would say that over the years that they've just become more receptive to at least hearing, like, oh, we went here, we did this, we did that. And they're like, oh, that sounds nice. Okay, okay, you know. And yeah, so it just got, I would say, better as time has gone on. I mean, not like we can be like, oh, mom, dad, I met this great guy and this, like, no, but, you know, maybe at some point, maybe. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I would say probably sometime last year where they may have said, where they did say something like, I just want you guys to be happy. But that's like very broad. It's not like, you know, we were talking about something and then that just kind of came up out of the blue and it's like, oh, okay.
That's, but that is also very, it means a lot coming from
an actor. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, like, for example, they wanted both of us to be doctors, but we both ended up being nurses. And, you know, we've been able to, you know, do some really, you know, dope things in that aspect with our careers. And, you know, they've just been able to say like, oh, I'm proud of you. And those are things that we wanted to be able to hear when we were children. Instead of, you know, like those are things we wanted to hear as children for doing the things that we desire to do as opposed to doing the things that made them happy while we forgot about ourselves. You know what I mean? So it's good for them to be able to be like, oh, I'm proud of you. I love you. This, that, and the third. And like, you know, we're going to go see them. Excuse me, in 2 weeks for Nigerian Independence Day weekend in Houston. Not like we'll spend all the time with them because, you know, but how it is like, there's this one, like, I guess you would say, like, he's a Nigerian gay influencer based out of the UK, Dan Yomi, that came out, like, this story that came about how he came out to his parents on WhatsApp and all that, and I followed him for some years, and, you know, he said something like, the best relationship to have with my parents is to have a long distance relationship. So, like, while my parents and I we don't talk every single day, or we don't have like the deepest meaningful conversations about everything or whatever, like super often, but I just have learned to take them in doses and to set boundaries with them and for them to learn to do things for themselves and not for me to like forget about myself in order to gain like approval or love or what have you from them. You know, I know I'm getting real deep with you and everybody that's listening in.
It is the truth. It is the truth. Mm-hmm. I feel like everybody who is, you know, LGBT, whether you're gay, lesbian, trans, mm-hmm. non-binary, if you're living outside the margins and you are Nigerian, your relationship with parents most of the time, there are people who are lucky who have been blessed to have very fruitful relationships. But for the for the bulk of us, it's just a situation of you're buying time till the other shoe drops, or you have, like you said, a long distance relationship. So you're hitting the nail on the head, actually.
Yeah. So I would say, I mean, it's just like our parents like really were on that strong end of really just like tolerating us and like whatever we had to say and our existence. But now I would say that it's moving more so away from that. And I don't know exactly, I mean, we're definitely not all the way toward acceptance, but it's just in a better place now. Like, for example, when they came to visit my brother in Atlanta after he moved into his house, which I live in, you know, they were like, ah, a whole other closet, you know, someone else could be here in this closet. And my brother said, oh yeah, my ex used to be in this, had his stuff in this closet. And then my parents just remained silent. And then they just continued to look through the rest of the house. So, you know, it's like dropping those little things on them little by little by little. And, you know, I remember like whenever we would come together, it used to be the thing of like, when we, they would like, just try to like catch us and be like, oh yeah, we need to pray. We must pray before you all travel, you know? And then we would start praying. And I remember like very, very early on, it would be like, you know, Father God, may they be able to find wife and have many children and get married in Jesus' name. And they would look at us and be like, say amen, you know? And we would just be like, amen, I guess. And then later on, when we would, over the years, like since like that would be like as early as like maybe 2015 or 2016, but like later on when we pray, they just really genuinely just pray for our well-being and just for us to be happy and to just be satisfied with whatever it is we're doing in life, you know. But we'll have our moments. Like we went to our cousin's wedding, you know, recently out of town, and we all, you know, came together. It's been probably two decades or more since we've seen this set of cousins or whatever in the US. And you know, one of our cousins was getting married, and when she had her wedding reception, we were talking to one of her friends, this one Nigerian guy, then this one woman comes up, Black American woman, you know, beautiful, all that. We were like just chatting and everything, and the conversation was going really, really well. And I noticed that my mom was like texting me, calling me, because I saw the alerts on my smartwatch or whatever, my Fitbit. But I just was still talking to the girl, and I was like, oh, what do you do for a living? And she asked me what I do, and she's like, oh, she's an anesthesiologist. I'm like, whoa, a whole anesthesiologist, and you look like this. And you know, the conversation was going really well. Then I said, oh, my parents are trying to get my attention. Spoke with them. They're like, don't you see this girl? She's liking you. You need to get her number. And I was like, and me and my brother just looked at our parents. We were like, mom, dad, we love you, but that's not gonna happen. And then we just gave them a hug. They gave us a hug, and they just dropped it. So like, to be from where we are now, from where we were 5, 6, 7 years ago, it's like growth that they just dropped it. Like they learned to respect our boundaries, you know? So, yeah, you know, we've come a long way, you know, in regards to the question of like repairing the relationship, you know?
That's really great to hear. And mm-hmm. I'm praying that, you know, things continue to improve mm-hmm. with you and your folks. I think that's what we all want, to be able to show them love in the way that we feel that they deserve. When it comes to dating, how does it come into play? Your Nigerianness, because the experiences are different, and mm-hmm. A lot of people, especially when you're in your 30s, mm-hmm. When you're dating, a lot of people want to know, okay, is it going to be long term? Are we going to get married? Are we going to be very committed? You know, but I'm just saying that from a much more general scope. Mm-hmm. But your experiences, our experiences as Nigerians, as whoever we are, mm-hmm. Can come into play when these decisions are being made. People always introduce their partners to their parents. Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to meet your dad? Am I going to meet your mom? All these things. How does it come to play when it comes to dating for you?
I mean, like, I know, like, I would say that as far as people that I've dated, that I would say it's been half like Black Americans and then half Africans, whether the Africans were born here or they came, you know, from abroad and they've been here for a few years or whatever. And I would say that as far as meeting family, the Black American people, they definitely had more of that thing of, oh yeah, like in the past, whether it's been their parents or at least cousins or people that are their chosen family have met their who they're dating. When it comes to the people who are African, on the other hand, it's just like a thing of, oh no, like if I were to meet anybody, it would be more so the people that they've just known since they've been in America. You know, like with me and how it comes into play for me, if anyone meets anybody, it was just my twin, you know, because us both being Nigerian and gay and going through very similar experiences being here in Atlanta, that's pretty much the family that they would get as far as like who they would meet, you know what I mean? So if anybody at this point in my life, like if I were to meet a man out tonight and, you know, things started to go really, really well, he would at least know my twin brother. But I would say, like, as time has gone on, like I came out to cousins of mine that live here, and then even one cousin of mine that he came from Nigeria. And I remember like years ago, like I met him back in, for the first time back, like probably in the late 90s, but like to have like an actual conversation with him, I had a conversation with him back in Nigeria back in 2014. And that was around the time when that whole same sex BS law was passed in Nigeria. And I remember having the conversation with him, and he was more conservative back then, but most recently when since he's been in America, like he's been to nursing school here, you know, he got a whole girlfriend here and she's from Nigeria too, but they're both very open-minded. And like my twin brother came out to him, I'm sure he knows about me, but I didn't explicitly say anything, but like I finally let him follow me on Instagram instead of just only being on Facebook. And like, if he doesn't know now, he knows about me and my twin. So if anyone that I'm dating, they're gonna meet my twin and they're gonna meet cousins from both sides of my family that know about me and my twin brother. That would be like the gist of, you know, who they would meet and how like meeting family and all that comes into play. My parents, I don't know when or if that would happen, but at this point in my life, I feel like it would just have to be like down the line. You know, I'd have to really, really believe in the relationship, you know, regardless of who I'm dating. And it might be like, oh, my parents might be like, oh, how's everything? Oh, I might just drop on them like, oh, me and my partner did this and we traveled here and it was an amazing experience, and just see how they react to that, you know.
But away from just even meeting the parents, right? Mm-hmm. Just the way you grew up and the way you came into your sexuality and the way mm-hmm. I've had to navigate different spaces wearing different mm-hmm. hats and mm-hmm. how, you know, you've had to work, you know, to compensate and all these things we've talked about, like mm-hmm. you know, over the past couple of minutes, how has it influenced how you engage with people in America, with dating, you know, how has he formed you? What are some of the, how do you feel? Because there's always a connection, right? Mm-hmm. With how we are and our background to the person mm-hmm. that we are now, you mm-hmm. know? So mm-hmm. How is it for you?
I would say that, I guess, like, if I just talk about just being Nigerian first, I mean, work ethic is a important thing, and remaining focused and, you know, having faith and all that is a thing. So, like, in anything that I do, you know, like, just if I say putting God first, you know, stuff like that, and leaning on those beliefs and the things that I was rooted in as a child, you know, and growing up. How else? If I talk about dating, a lot of the Black Americans that I dated, the first time that they had Nigerian food was because of me. you know, I feel like a lot of African, like, you know, Black Americans, they really are more so exposed to Caribbean culture than African culture, you know, whether it's the music, the fashion, the food, like art, whatever it is. And, you know, I've introduced guys to like how I dress, you know, the music that I like to listen to, the food that I eat, taking them to different restaurants here, stuff like that. What else? I mean, those are some of the ways. It's kind of like a broad question that you asked, but those are some things, I guess, you know.
Okay, so I think what I'm really trying to to understand is, well, from my experience, I feel like, you know, there's some things that I might make reference to that people might not understand if they're not, if they've not had the experiences that I've had. Do you get what I'm saying? You know, they are, and so it makes dating like a struggle because you're like, okay, you don't really get where I'm coming from because you know how to hide from your folks. So you've not had you've not had the struggle of being of living among people who, you know, hate LGBT people. You don't have that experience. So you don't understand why I have to navigate the world this way. You don't understand why I'm very protective of my personal space. You don't understand why, like, all these nuances sometimes can get lost. And I was wondering if that is the same experience for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things, like, I've met people that are like, oh my gosh, thank God I didn't have to go through this or that. You know, like, I remember when I was still very much in the closet and people just wouldn't get it. And then there's also certain things, like, there's a lot of like negative preconceived notions of Nigerians, like when it comes to, it could even be friendship, but like dating, if I speak about that, like, oh, I hear y'all Africans, y'all be crazy, or y'all controlling, or this, that, and the third. So it's like, I'm like, damn, like, this is really what they think about us, you know? But it's like, no, like, that's just not the case. And then also, like, for example, dealing with growing up Nigerian and like the shame around sexual orientation and expressing whether it may be gender identity or sexuality or having certain conversations with different people. Like me, when it comes to being at work, I'm not out to anybody. I've never worked a job and been out, but people may have their own idea of maybe what I may or may not be into. I mean, I've had guys come up to me and talk about women and all that before, you know, and I've been asked, oh, am I married or am I single or whatever? But I really just don't tap into all that too much. Like others, they'll really like talk freely about who they're dating or their dating struggles or how great their marriage is or, you know, stuff like that, like just the daily stuff that that people deal with in their relationships or their marriages or going out on dates. But like me, I'm not as inclined to speak on that because of just part of it is like just maybe the shame around it or, you know, just feeling like I've always had to hide and being private. Like at work, people will be like, oh, you're not so social, you don't talk too much. But then it's like, on the contrary, like they kind of have an idea of who I am, but they really don't have any like fucking idea about me. But when I'm outside of work, like I can be very, very social when I want to, you know, and I have my own like group of friends and my own community and all that stuff, you know? So I hope that kind of answers your question as far as like other ways that my Nigerianness, so to speak, has had an impact in my life around like the being gay and all that, you know.
Yeah, there's been a lot of conversation, you know, on social media in recent time about being Nigerian American and being Nigerian, you know, and the differences that abide. And you know, I remember during NSAS, there was a lot of conversation about how folks who live in America don't understand the struggle of being back home, mm-hmm. And maybe wear the Nigerian-ness as a badge that they can take off and, you know, mm-hmm. put on whenever they want to.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very intense conversation. And just because, you know, there's like this boost of, you know, Africans right now in mainstream media and mm-hmm. all that conversation. Tell me about your experience, just being Nigerian in general, living in, being first generation Nigerian, because you've lived in America all your life. But just that experience so far and just how the conversation, just add some little bit of, let me see.
I get what yes. you're asking, you know. Yeah, I mean, growing up, like, you know, like I said, you know, when it came to the dating thing, the preconceived notions about Nigerians or just Africa as a whole. But yeah, growing up, you know, I mean, I don't know if you've ever like talked to other, you know, African, like children of Africans that were born in America, and it's just like, oh, being called like African booty scratcher, or do y'all live in huts? Do y'all ride rhinos, giraffes? Do you have a pet lion, a pet tiger, a pet elephant? Like all this bullshit that people really just, you know, excuse my French, they have no idea. Like there's places in Nigeria and across all African nations that are more affluent and look better than places in America, you know? And I was able to see that for the first time when I was, you know, 9 years old. And I think, like back to the conversation that you said that was happening on social media, like it was always a thing of, you know, a lot of Black people when I was growing up didn't want to identify with Africa at all because of the negative, you know, viewpoints in America, American media, the negative portrayal of, you know, Nigeria or Ghana or anywhere else in Africa. Like, if anything was shown on TV, it was always a little kid sitting on some farm or just in like a very rural village. Flies on their face and their eyes, they're hungry, and people really just thought this is what Africa looks like. And like I remember growing up and dealing with people who were Black American, and they would just hate on me or want to make fun of me because I, you know, am a child of Nigerian immigrants, you know, like those of us born here, like we are the like true definition of African American, you know, or if you want to say Nigerian American, Ghanaian American, whatever it is. And it would be just like, you know, just people wanting to just start trouble or whatever. Like I could be in class, and when they're calling out names to see if someone is present in the class, and they get to my name and they can't pronounce it, and kids will start laughing. And I mean, I got all kinds of, you know, I mean, you know, my name Obina, it's Obani, Obama, whatever. Like just people would just fuck up my name any way that they could, you know? My last name, the same thing. I mean, they would just, you know, just do it out of fun. They just thought it was funny. You know, kids can be like ruthless, you know. And you know, also I would say it's interesting because it kind of plays into, like, I would say it would be a little bit advantageous as well at work, because, and not for, I would say, the best reasons, because one, white people or Asian people, like you see, like I don't know if you've ever seen like articles or things on the news where it's like there's two sides of the same coin, where like one, when people would be looking for people to hire out of a hiring database, they would put certain like vowel or consonant combinations that they don't want to show up in their people that they want to recruit for hiring. But then the other side of the coin is you have people who would want to actually hire those who are of African or Caribbean descent, because people would say, oh, you guys, y'all have like a better work ethic. Y'all aren't lazy. Your parents having that mindset of an immigrant, it transfers on to you guys, and like y'all work hard, y'all aren't lazy like Black Americans. And like also the other thing, like I remember as an aside, like I remember when I was working in an ice cream store when I was an undergrad, and I was speaking with one Black American guy, and he was like, oh, you guys, and like they'll say like this university that we're at is 13% Black, but it really ain't. It's really like 8 to 9% of y'all and 4 to 5% of us that are really Black. And you know, all them terms y'all be calling us, Akatas or whatever. And I'm like, oh shit, like they really know like what's up, like what's really going on, you know? And there's so many, like I would say, like growing up, there were a lot of like intersectionalities of identity that I had, you know, being African or being Nigerian, being Black, being gay, being a man, being a Houstonian, like, I mean, just so many things, being a nerd, being a gamer, like just so many things that would cross, and it would be like, how do I know where I fit in? Like being, I feel like we had this conversation a little bit earlier where it was like, not on this particular, you know, conversation, but like, I remember growing up and being like, oh, okay, I'm too white for Black people, too Black for white people, too African for Americans, too American for Africans, too straight for some gays, too gay for straights. I mean, it's like, where do I fit in? Where do I fit in? Where do I fit in? You know? So I hope that kind of answers your question, you know?
So how do you navigate all these experiences? What have you learned from all of this? How do you engage now with African Americans, with people who live on the continent? Mm-hmm. How do you navigate all these spaces now? How do you balance it out?
I mean, at the end of the day, I just learned that I can only be myself, and whoever's gonna, you know, be around me for who I am as a person is who is gonna be around. So there's Black people that I associate with. There's those who are, you know, all across the diaspora, whether they're Afro-Latin, Caribbean, African, that I associate with. And I can only just be myself. So it's like, I don't try to like overcompensate or act a different way, like to make others feel comfortable anymore. I can only just, you know, be how I'm gonna be and talk how I'm gonna talk. You know, there's some gay people that it's like, oh, you're not gay enough. And then there's some people who are straight, which I don't know too many of. I would say that the majority of like my social circle is definitely like from across the African diaspora, and they identify as gay or bisexual, you know, but I just am myself. But like the people that I know, they're like born in America like me, or they were born in Nigeria or a Cameroon or Ghana, and they come here, and we just all respect each other's differences, you know, and that's just the way it should be, you know. So to sum it all up, just really just being myself.
That was really amazing. Thank you for sharing. Is there anything you would want the listeners to know, anything you want to share before we wrap up this episode?
I hope that there's people out there that can relate to different aspects of my story, and that they know that they are good enough just as they are, and that you know, like there's a campaign that says it gets better, like it really does get better. You know, it's just about who you surround yourself around, the choices that you make, the spaces that you put yourself in. And I'm just like hoping that once this interview ends that I've said everything that I wanted to say. But I mean, that's definitely like something that's important to me. Like what I've learned from the people that I told you about when I was living in Florida, that they served as like a support system for me, is like they told me to, you know, pay it forward and be who I needed when I was younger, whether it's like me being who I needed for my quote unquote inner child. Some people may understand that concept, you know, from psychology or whatever, but then there's also being who I needed for someone else. So like I have somebody in my life that I say he's like my little brother. He's from Cameroon. And, you know, we've talked, you know, at lengths about coming out and how he came out to his mom. He's in his late 20s. And, you know, I just show him a lot of love and support that I feel like his people should be showing him, but they don't, you know? So for anybody else out there, like once you get to that place where you're like independent and you're comfortable in yourself, like pay it forward, like, you know, really be like a mentor or a support source, be a source of support for somebody who's like really, 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 really going through it. Because I think that doing that will enable someone to really be able to just like be free and accept themselves more and more for who they are. And like, you know, like that one guy that I say, he's like my little brother. I've told him so much about how like therapy has helped me on and off over the years. Like I've been in and out of therapy since 2012 when I really started to like struggle and struggle and struggle with accepting my sexual orientation and what that would look like or whatever. And now he's at the point where he's like, man, I really think I'm gonna look into therapy. And I'm like, whoa, like I never would have thought that he would have considered that. But just anything that will make yourself better, like do that, you know? Don't just seek temporary high, you know, just improve on yourself and be able to do that for some, you know, be a source of support for somebody else. So, yeah.
Thank you, Obinna. This has been really a good conversation. I really appreciate you sharing with us and just letting us get a glimpse into what it means to be Nigerian, to be American, and to be gay. And living in that intersection. So thank you.
Yeah, you're most welcome.
Thank you so much for sticking with us till the end. I really do appreciate it. If you would like to connect with Obinna, follow him on Instagram at igwe_obinna1. That is igwe_obinna1. I am Harry Itie at Cross Social Media Platforms, and the Harry Minutes is available wherever podcasts are streamed. This is the Harry Minute. Bye for now.